Model Test 2. Part 3. Listening Comprehension. Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Question 11. There's a great movie on TV tonight. Do you want to watch it?
I'd rather not, if it's on at the same time as a football match.
Question. What does the man imply? Question 12. I'm trying to finish these practice test questions, but I've still got about 12 questions to do. At this rate, I'll be burning the midnight oil if I hope to finish.
Oh, that explains why you've been hiding in here. You probably haven't heard that the professor postponed the exam until further notice.
Question. What does the man mean? Question 13. I don't know why, but since I saw Williams on TV, I don't feel so bad about myself now.
Well, they say laughter is the best medicine.
Question. What can be inferred about the show the woman just watched?
Question 14. Did you see that new poster they just put up in the cafeteria? I wonder whose idea that was.
You know, there's nothing wrong with the poster itself. It just doesn't go with the colours in the cafeteria.
Question. What do we learn about the poster from the conversation?
Question 15. I'm taking Professor Johnson's course next semester. I heard that she was very tough, so I'm a little worried. Can you give me any suggestion?
If I were you, I'd take careful notes. Her exams are based on her lectures.
Question. What advice does the man give the woman? Question 16. Are you ready to head over to the library? Do you have your student ID card with you this time?
It's right here. I must have left it in my room. I'll be right back.
Question. What will the man probably do?
Question 17. I think I'll run down to the bookstore and get a few things.
But aren't we going to meet Shirley at the student centre? She's expecting us at 4 o'clock, and it's almost that now.
Question. What do you learn from the conversation? Question 18. Isn't it rather cold outside, Sally?
It is a bit, but I can't stand the terrible smoke inside. I'd rather stay here if you don't mind.
Question. Why does the woman want to stay outside?
Conversation 1.
Hi, Sue. Where have you been?
Hi, Dan. I was just at the library. I have to hand in my biology paper tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, no. I thought it wasn't due till Monday.
Don't worry. It is due Monday, but I'm going away for the weekend and won't be back till Monday night.
Where are you going?
California. We're having a family reunion. It's my grandmother's 90th birthday, so all the cousins and aunts and uncles are going. She planned the whole thing herself.
Wow, that's great. How many people will be there?
Around 60. My family is big and spread up, but we're pretty close. So have you started working on your biology paper?
Yeah, I'm doing it on bees and how they're able to recognize whether another bee is related to them.
How can they tell?
They use their sense of smell. The bees guard their nest this way. If another bee approaches the nest, the guard determines if the new bee is familiar. If it is, it's allowed to enter.
Interesting. Can other insects do this?
Well, the paper wasps can. Each wasp nest has a special combination of plant fibers, and so the wasps that live there have a unique smell. Those two are the only kinds I've read about so far.
Well, you've still got time. It sounds like that the bees are picky about who comes to their family reunion.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 19. What is the relationship between the two speakers?
Question 20. Why will the woman reunite with her family?
Question 21. According to the man, how do some bees use their sense of smell?
Question 22. What will the man probably do over the weekend?
Conversation 2.
Oh, Jana, you're early. I'm happy you're here early today because I'd like to talk about your attendance for a moment.
Gee, Dr. Livingston, I'm really sorry about missing class yesterday.
Actually, it's been several times. Counting today, we've only had 6 classes, yet you've already missed 4. It's more than a half. You won't be able to pass if you're constantly absent, and I really don't want to fail anyone.
Sorry, I've been extremely busy. I can explain for it, Dr. Livingston. I have a part-time job, so...
Well, I hope you're all ready for today's exam.
Today? I thought it was Monday.
Read the syllabus, Jana. This is precisely what I'm talking about. You should either make an effort to attend, or you should consider withdrawing while it's still possible.
What do you mean?
Today's the final day you can withdraw and get a full refund.
Maybe. I really should. What do you suggest?
I wish you could attend classes regularly. However, if you don't think you're capable of this, then don't waste your money.
Thanks, Dr. Livingston. I really appreciate your advice. If it's okay, I suppose I go ahead and drop the class.
It's entirely up to you, but that might be best if you don't think things are going to change. Excuse me, the students are coming and I've got to get ready for class. I wish you the very best of luck, Jana.
Thank you, Dr. Livingston. Goodbye.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
Question 23. What is the woman's problem?
Question 24. How many classes has the woman attended, if today is counted?
Question 25. What does the woman decide to do?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. Lately, your job has taken up much of your time. You've even started bringing work home. You spend Saturdays and Sundays with your head bent over your work. And you are supposed to spend these days with your family or friends, or for your relaxation. No longer do you work in order to live, but you now live in order to work. A workaholic. This is what you have become. Here are some tips to help you, the workaholic, refocus and get the best out of life and keep you healthy and alive in the long run too. First, 8 hours of sleep. Make it a point to get at least 8 hours of sleep. While food has substitutes in the form of natural medicines or artificial foods, there are no substitutes for sleep. Don't believe that you can always catch some sleep later. Your body cannot make up for lost sleep because it is not physiologically possible. Second, strictly family on weekends. Resolve to make Saturdays and Sundays strictly for family time and stick to this. Mondays until Fridays, you make an excuse not to relax and spend time with your family because it's work time. Why not make a similar excuse for Saturdays and Sundays? I can't work today because I'm spending time with my family. Third, work up those muscles. Exercise, exercise, exercise. Set aside at least an hour each day for exercise. Your body needs to be conditioned, and working non-stop isn't going to give it the proper physical conditioning it needs. Since most workaholics tend to have their behinds stuck on their chairs, it's even more important that you get some exercise. If you start following the tips outlined today, then you've just taken the first step to living a healthy, successful, and happy life.
Questions 26 to 29 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 26. What is a workaholic according to the passage?
Question 27. According to the speaker, what cannot your body make up for?
Question 28. What time should be reserved for your family?
Question 29. What is the third piece of advice given in the talk? Passage 2. Good morning. First, I'd like to welcome all of you to this workshop on student housing. I'll go through the information about types of housing available for the fall and later hand out application forms. Then, if you have any questions, feel free to ask me. There are three main types of housing here for you to choose from: the dorms, the family student apartments, and the international houses. As of now, there is some space available in each type, but they are filling up fast. You should get your application in as soon as possible. Let me explain some of the main features for each type of housing. We have men's dorms, women's dorms, and co-ed dorms. Most of the rooms are double. We also have a few triples and a few single suites, but I think the suites are already taken. On each floor of the dorms, there is a large bathroom and shower area. There aren't cooking facilities in the dorms, but you can buy a meal ticket for the cafeteria. The family student apartments are grouped together near the north entrance to the school. Each apartment has a kitchen, a living-dining area, and either one or two bedrooms. There is a fenced play area for children. The international houses are a group of apartments for any student. They are organized into language and culture themes. It's been a good way for students to learn about other cultures as well as practice languages. These houses are for all students, no matter how much of a particular language you speak. I think that Spanish house is full, but there are rooms available in all the other houses. Well, I'll pass out these application forms now and answer your individual questions.
Questions 30 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 30. Which type of housing allows cooking?
Question 31. Which place has no more room for students?
Question 32. What will the listeners probably do next?
Passage 3. One important thing about art movements is that their popularity can be affected by social conditions, which are themselves often affected by historical events. As an example, look at what happened in the United States early in the 20th century, around the time of the Great Depression. The art movement known as regionalism had begun in the United States even before the Depression occurred. But it really flourished in the 1930s during the Depression years. Why? Well, many artists who had been living in big cities were forced by the economic crisis to leave those cities and move back to their small hometowns in rural America. And some of these artists came to truly embrace life in small towns and to reject city life in so-called sophisticated society. These artists, or specifically certain painters, really built the regionalist movement. They created scenes of everyday life in small towns or farming areas. And their style was not at all neutral, really big, glorified, or romanticized country life, showing it stable, wholesome, and embodying important American traditions. And this style became very popular, in part because of the economic conditions of the time. You see, the Depression had caused many Americans to begin to doubt their society. But regionalist artists painted scenes that glorified American values, scenes that many Americans could easily identify with. So the movement helped strengthen people's faith in their country, faith that had weakened as a result of the Depression. But in the 1940s, before and after the Second World War, American culture began to take on a much more international spirit, and regionalism, with its focus on small-town life, well, it lost a lot of popularity as American society changed once again.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard.
Question 33. What is the passage mainly about?
Question 34. What does the speaker say about the artists in the United States during the Great Depression?
Question 35. What happened in the USA in the 1940s, around the time of World War II, that affected the popularity of the regionalist art?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written.
Now listen to the passage.
We are camping on an island in Lake George. We delight in this lake for many reasons, but chief among them is the cool, clear water. We drink the lake water, wherever we are, and this is also a special pleasure. But the water today is seldom as the explorers found it. Today, no sensible person would dip a drinking cup into the Potomac River, or the Hudson, or the Ohio. Even a woodland spring cannot be trusted unless it has been tested and certified. Some settlers who floated down the Ohio River went ashore and built homes beside a creek that flows into the river from the north. The creek was clear and bubbling then. Recently, I spent most of a day exploring this creek, but not for pleasure. Factories have displaced cornfields, and tall apartment buildings stand where trees once grew. The creek's banks are raw and ugly. Between the river banks, a thick, dark fluid flows slowly, carrying rags, paper, and assorted filth. We Americans like to think of ourselves as the cleanest people on earth. Our televisions are preoccupied with soap. Our drinking glasses must sparkle and our bedsheets must be whiter than white. But the drains from those shining places discharge into this dirty ditch, mixing with the wastes of factories and stores, street washings and other refuses. Pollution of our rivers, streams, lakes and ponds has become the common condition. At our island camp, we are far removed from such darkened air and polluted water. The air smells of pine, and the water is clear and blue. However, even here, birds and fish have been killed by man's new poisons. Here, and at home, we breathe the air and drink the water. We have no other choice. This is our environment.
Now the passage will be read again.
We are camping on an island in Lake George. We delight in this lake for many reasons, but chief among them is the cool, clear water. We drink the lake water, wherever we are, and this is also a special pleasure. But the water today is seldom as the explorers found it. Today, no sensible person would dip a drinking cup into the Potomac River, or the Hudson, or the Ohio. Even a woodland spring cannot be trusted unless it has been tested and certified. Some settlers who floated down the Ohio River went ashore and built homes beside a creek that flows into the river from the north. The creek was clear and bubbling then. Recently, I spent most of a day exploring this creek, but not for pleasure. Factories have displaced cornfields, and tall apartment buildings stand where trees once grew. The creek's banks are raw and ugly. Between the river banks, a thick, dark fluid flows slowly, carrying rags, paper, and assorted filth. We Americans like to think of ourselves as the cleanest people on earth. Our televisions are preoccupied with soap. Our drinking glasses must sparkle, and our bedsheets must be whiter than white. But the drains from those shining places discharge into this dirty ditch, mixing with the wastes of factories and stores, street washings and other refuses. Pollution of our rivers, streams, lakes and ponds has become the common condition. At our island camp, we are far removed from such darkened air and polluted water. The air smells of pine, and the water is clear and blue. However, even here, birds and fish have been killed by man's new poisons. Here, and at home, we breathe the air and drink the water. We have no other choice. This is our environment.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
We are camping on an island in Lake George. We delight in this lake for many reasons, but chief among them is the cool, clear water. We drink the lake water, wherever we are, and this is also a special pleasure. But the water today is seldom as the explorers found it. Today, no sensible person would dip a drinking cup into the Potomac River, or the Hudson, or the Ohio. Even a woodland spring cannot be trusted unless it has been tested and certified. Some settlers who floated down the Ohio River went ashore and built homes beside a creek that flows into the river from the north. The creek was clear and bubbling then. Recently, I spent most of a day exploring this creek, but not for pleasure. Factories have displaced cornfields, and tall apartment buildings stand where trees once grew. The creek's banks are raw and ugly. Between the river banks, a thick, dark fluid flows slowly, carrying rags, paper, and assorted filth. We Americans like to think of ourselves as the cleanest people on earth. Our televisions are preoccupied with soap. Our drinking glasses must sparkle, and our bedsheets must be whiter than white. but the drains from those shining places discharge into this dirty ditch, mixing with the wastes of factories and stores, street washings and other refuses. Pollution of our rivers, streams, lakes and ponds has become the common condition. At our island camp, we are far removed from such darkened air and polluted water. The air smells of pine, and the water is clear and blue. However, even here, birds and fish have been killed by man's new poisons. Here, and at home, we breathe the air and drink the water. We have no other choice. This is our environment.